Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning, talking a little NFL. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. He'll be with us for the next 30 minutes. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this
awesome.
Morning?
Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, the Jonathan Taylor situation, which we talked about last week. Yeah. No trade to this point. As a Green Bay Packers fan, I found it interesting that apparently they were interested in Jonathan Taylor. But where do you think this all goes from here? And what did you make of no deal being reached with Jonathan Taylor by the Tuesday deadline?
Well, I was a little surprised that it came down to talking about two teams. I think, you know, there were other teams that made calls, but obviously, you know, the Packers and the Miami Dolphins were clearly the two teams that were more engaged than others. You know, you mentioned the Packers. I think it's interesting, you know, just talking to someone there. I think the Packers are really happy with where Jordan Love is at this stage. You know, I think there's some, you know, hopefulness in what they saw in the preseason, you know, played against a lot of second and third string players, but I think they felt like, okay, this is a positive track that he's on. But I think the Packers also look at the roster and said, okay, man, tight end, wide receiver, ton of youth here. You know, that's a little bit of a hitch in the development, just knowing that there's so much inexperience around Jordan Love. And I think that's what drove the Jonathan Taylor interest, the idea that you could bring in an elite level running back who could kind of help smooth out the process, give Jordan Love someone to lean on, you know, basically give him what he would want to give Anthony Richardson with the Colts. So I think, you know, that was part of why the Packers were involved. And then Miami, what running back has Miami not kicked the tires on over the last several months? They've looked at a multitude of running backs, and it made a lot of sense there. Obviously, we hear about the asking price, particularly with Miami and Jalen Waddle, plus other assets. Pretty steep asking price for Indianapolis Colts, but shows you really what Chris Ballard and ownership wanted to get, especially ownership wanted to get out of Jonathan Taylor if they were going to trade him. It's interesting because you go back to the Christian McCaffrey trade with the 49ers. Remember, that's a guy who I think, honestly, if he stays healthy this year, from putting my eyes on him, it's probably the first time in a while I've looked at a running back and thought to myself, you know, this could be like an MVP candidate if this guy hits all the markers that he looks capable of hitting going into the season, stays healthy. That guy got dealt for a second, a third, a fourth, and a fifth, okay? Add it all up. It's basically first-round value for Christian McCaffrey. Jalen Waddle plus is more than first-round value. And that's what the Colts supposedly were looking for in this process was kind of first-round value. I think the talks with the Dolphins showed either they're asking for more or they wanted to load up their ask so they could turn back to Jonathan Taylor and say, hey, look, you know, here's what you think you're worth. We went through these talks. This is the value these teams assigned to you. Maybe you need to recalibrate where you're at contract-wise. And that's not really a way to get a deal done with Jonathan Taylor. So putting him on PUP is not a surprise to me. He's going to sit out for 4 weeks. I don't think he was taking a carry anyway. I think they knew that. And I think after 4 weeks, they're basically going to turn back to him and say, either you're on the field in week five or this is hold-in. We're going to consider suspending you, or, you know, we're going to have to look again at trade talks leading up to the October 31st trade deadline. It's not going to a good place. I don't think the way that they've handled it has really been fruitful in terms of repairing the situation. But I also say this, I think Jonathan Taylor has played a role in this at this point. I think they don't believe he's hurt. I think they believe he can go out there and play. And, you know, I think the two sides have both sort of had a hand in this impasse and the messiness that really they're both kind of dealing with in this situation. But I really don't – I would be stunned, I think, if Indianapolis ends up fielding him at any point this year. I'll tell you this, though. One team that I know made a call on him, had a chance to talk to their general manager, was not the Dolphins or the Packers. That GM told me, he was like, I think they still get a deal done at some point, which was a little bit of a surprise to me that was still – something that an outside source sort of gathered from their talk with the Colts.
I mean, they need to, but it's not going to be very good, right? I mean, it's not going to be great.
I mean, you know, okay, let's think about this for 1 second. When we look at Saquon, right, and how that deal got done, we look at Josh Jacobs, how that deal got done. Granted, those are just 1 year deals, right? But if you look at where the franchise tag will be for them next year, right? If they remain with the Giants and Raiders, you're talking about a zone where you're in the $13 to $14 million range in terms of the 2024 salary. You know, I think if that's realistically sort of the APY now that we're looking at for running backs, and we're talking 3 years of guaranteed money, if you're talking $14 million a season, and it's 3 years of guaranteed money, most teams everywhere will tell you, yeah, you know what, that's the ceiling. That's it. So if the Colts, if this is, if you're kicking and screaming over $10 million, $11 million a season, $12 million a season, and the difference is getting to 14 and saying this is sort of, this is it. This is the attic of running backs now. That's how high you can go. Just get it done. Like, it makes no sense to argue over, you know, I would say $6 to $9 million in guaranteed money over 3 years, because we all know it's going to be 3 years of guaranteed money for running backs max. So if you're really arguing about, let's just call it $9 million. If you're arguing about $9 million over a 3 year period and you're starting Anthony Richardson out of the gate, it's foolish for the Colts to be going down this road at this point. And I would pin that on Jim Irsay. And I guess Jonathan Taylor, if he's sitting there saying, well, it's got to be, rather than $14 million APY, it has to be 16 or 17. He's never going to get that anywhere in the NFL. That's a pipe dream. So, yeah, it's messy. It's unfortunate. And I can understand why Chris Ballard gets out there and says it sucks. He's right.
So another player with a team, I think this will get done, I would think. I mean, they're not going to screw this up, right? The Niners and Nick Bosa.
So this is interesting.
That was a deep sigh, Charles. I heard the sigh there.
I had a GM hit me up yesterday, and he said, are the Niners trade Nick Bosa? And I was like, not that I've known. You know, like, okay, that's an interesting question. So I hit up like a number of GMs that normally would be in those talks, right, especially in the AFC, because I don't think the Niners would ever deal Nick Bosa inside the NFC. So I basically hit up a bunch of AFC GMs and I'm like, hey, are you hearing anything? What's the deal? All said the same thing, not hearing anything. I had one who said, you know, we kind of hearing rumors, but there was nothing, you know, tangible to it. So I reached out to the Nick Bosa camp and I kind of said, what, you know, where are we at? Like, what's going on? Why am I getting GMs calling and asking me this question? This was before Kyle Shanahan addressed it yesterday, and we'll get to that. But I was basically told from Nick Bosa's crew that, you know, deal's not done, that there's clearly a lot of work still to be done. I wouldn't say that they were close to finishing it, but that they did not have any in their mind conception that he was going to be traded. But they clearly had those talks. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that inside Nick Bosa's circle – there were talks about, you know, is this going to ultimately end in a trade? That's interesting, because I never in my mind thought they would ever get there. Of course, you know, DeForest Buckner, that's why it gives me pause, because when they realize we're not going to get this done with DeForest Buckner, they did deal him. And now we're talking with different level players with Nick Bosa, defensive player of the year. I think they feel like he's right in the wheelhouse of, like, you know, he's probably in year two of 5 or 6 years of Aaron Donald-esque dominance. And they're not going to want to give him up. But the interesting thing is he's repped by WME, William Morris, whatever the William Morris Entertainment or whatever it is. WME, the co-founder of WME is Joel Siegel. Well, Joel Siegel was the agent for Khalil Mack when Khalil Mack got traded from the Raiders at a time when Khalil Mack was going to reset the market from a defensive perspective. So there is some background here. Now, Joel Siegel's not his agent. Brian Arault is. Brian Arault is the co-head of WME. Joel Siegel's the other co-head of WME. But they're both, they're there together, okay? You talk about those guys, there's no doubt those agents are talking every day, like, how do we handle this? How do we move forward? Kyle Shanahan came out and said, we are not trading like Nick Bosa. He said this after I'd made all these calls, and then later in the afternoon, my NFL editor's like, oh, geez, Kyle addressed this. Everyone's saying no right now, but the deal was supposed to be done, okay? It was supposed to be done by now. It's supposed to be done a week ago. I think the Niners thought it was going to be done. Brian Arault's got to get this deal done not only with Bosa. He's got a Joe Burrow deal that he's got to get done with the Bengals that I've heard is not particularly close right now. So it's a lot on his plate. I think everybody's sort of surprised this isn't done at this stage. Nobody thinks Nick Bosa can be traded right now. Let's give it 10 days and let's see where this is 10 days from now, because I never thought Khalil Mack could get traded from the Raiders at a time when he did, and then he reset the defensive player market when he signed his deal. I highly doubt Bosa can, but it's not great that they're at this stage and not finished right now. If something doesn't get done in the next, like, 7 to 10 days, it's pretty problematic, and, you know, I think other teams are really going to kick up this idea of, like, maybe let's give the Niners a call and see if there's any chance Nick Bosa could potentially be made available by the Niners.
Rand Carthon's familiar with Nick Bosa.
Yes, yes, he is.
Hey, I'm
AFC. He's a GM of an AFC team, I'd like to point out.
I'm just telling you right now, like, there's no way he's getting traded inside the NFC, okay? Like, this isn't going to be the Niners sending Trey Lance to the Cowboys, okay? Like, they think a little bit more of Nick Bosa. And if that were to happen, he would definitely – it was funny because I was talking to an NFC GM, and he was like, just tell me he's going to AFC. He's like, he's definitely going to AFC, right? I was like, yeah, I don't think if it ever happened in their wildest dreams, he would end up in the AFC. I think they're adamant about not trading him, but I'm telling you, like, this is – the interesting thing about Brian Arault, too, you go back years and years ago when Aaron Donald had to do an extension with the Rams. It was Brian Arault and Todd France were both repping Aaron Donald at that time. The Rams are having a really hard time at the negotiating table with Brian Arault. And, you know, the deal did eventually get done with Aaron Donald, but, you know, it kind of got done by Todd France, not Brian Arault. And so, you know, it's just there's a lot of history there that you look at. And then, again, when you look at sort of the Khalil Mack, the past, you know, something did happen with someone else in WME. Who got a big time defensive player moved at a time when we didn't think it could happen. I'm not saying this is going to go down, but in the next 7 to 10 days, like, it's really important for that Nick Bosa deal to get finished off by the 49ers, because the teams are going to circle if that doesn't get done by the time the season kicks off.
It's really interesting stuff. We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We continue our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, we also talked about the Trey Lance situation last week. He ends up with the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones pulling the trigger on that front. A lot of conversation around that with Dak Prescott this week. What did you make of the destination for Trey Lance and what that means for his future?
It's weird, honestly. It was a weird destination. I actually just wrote about this and, you know, talked to a number of teams about the deal after it was consummated, and it was one of those rare instances where I think other team leadership were looking at it the way a lot of us were, where they're just like, I'm basically like, hey, well, you know, like, what do you think of this? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to make of it. I don't get it. Like, it's from what, in terms of like what Trey Lance needed, you know, I think it tweeted this, like, the consensus was this is a guy needed like a generous starting quarterback, needed an ability to go into a team and get reps, needed a fresh start, all these different things. But I think the reps was the really, really important part. As we talked about on the show, going all the way back to high school, you know, this is a guy that barely had 500, you know, passing attempts in an actual game, like a live game. And, you know, he's going to Dallas where, granted, I think he's going to have a generous quarterback. I think Dak Prescott, you know, what Dak said about, you know, welcoming him in and moving forward in the quarterback room is realistic. He's not getting the reps. Like, there's no way. I mean, he's not. And, you know, when you talk to other teams, what I thought was really interesting was the number of times you would hear people bring up, like, he's not just behind Dak. Like, he's behind Cooper Rush. Like, he's not getting reps over Cooper Rush. Like, he went from being a third quarterback in San Francisco on a good roster to being the third quarterback in Dallas and behind a second-string quarterback who, unlike Sam Darnold in San Francisco, has won meaningful games for the Cowboys. So he's really buried on the quarterback depth chart. So when you sit there and you go, okay, well, what's the upside here? All right, I ask teams, you know, like, weigh it out for me. Tell me what the upside is here. Well, the thought process is, probably not going to do anything in 2023 at all. Maybe in 2024, he makes Cooper Rush cuttable. Cooper Rush is on a two-year deal through 2024. And then at that point, he's the backup, and maybe Dak gets injured and Trey Lance ends up playing. The only way he'd get on the field in 2023 is just an insane rash of quarterback injuries. Either situation, not really good for Dallas. They're in a Super Bowl window. You don't want Trey Lance starting meaningful games for you right now. And so how does he really develop? No one knows. No one gets it. So the thought of like, well, hey, maybe he develops enough or showcases enough in the preseason next year to, you know, be attractive to a team. You trade him before you get out of camp next year, or he walks as a free agent and you get a compensatory pick. Man, that is a lot of drama to inject into your team. To go, well, maybe we take that fourth round pick, we turn into a third round pick. Like, it's just like, what are you doing? You know, Dak Prescott's getting asked about this. Mike McCarthy's getting asked about this. It's like, why weren't, you know, okay, Dak, you didn't get the heads up. Mike McCarthy, clearly you were not involved in this acquisition. So what was it? It was a Jerry Jones ego stroke. It was so Jerry could come out and say, well, you know, we had a second round grade on him and we spent a fourth round pick. And we had him in our second round on our board. Well, first off, why would you even say that? We all assumed he probably had a first-round grade on your board. So basically, you just told us it looks worse than we were probably assuming. Because up until that point, I just figured, probably got a first-round grade on this guy. And so that's the leap that you're making. No, Jerry says it was a second-round grade. And here's the rub. And I can't. Please remember this, and I want fans to hear this and think about this when these trades go down. When a team tells you we had X grade on a guy, right, and now we just spent a later pick a couple years down the line on the guy to go and get him, he had that grade before he threw passes in the NFL.
Right. It's totally irrelevant.
Like, now you know what he looks like throwing a football in the NFL. So if you sit there and go, well, we had a second-round grade on him going into the draft, what the hell is your grade on him now, 2 years later, now that you've seen him throw in the league? Well, here, let me answer that for you. You just spent a fourth. No other team was willing to give up a fourth, which means he's no better than a fifth-round grade in the 2023 draft, okay? For a number of teams, once you see a player showcase their abilities on the NFL level, it dramatically impacts where they should be slotted in an NFL draft. So you didn't really win anything by giving up a fourth for a guy who you thought was worth a second rounder in 2021, because now you know he wasn't worth a second rounder in 2021.
We got a weekend tryout grade just below UDFA on him. Very excited about this deal.
It's crazy to me. So look, of all the things, like realistically, if like one team was like, you know what, Trey Lance, like really, he needs to go wherever he can throw the football. Maybe it's not even in the NFL. He just needs to go somewhere where he can play at a decently high level of football, get on the field, throw a lot of passes, get a lot of reps, run an offense, be the leader in the quarterback room, all these different things, none of which he's going to get in Dallas. So we're going to spend the next 2 years staring at him in Dallas and going, what's really being accomplished here other than a bunch of drama, unless Dak Prescott completely falls apart or gets injured in the next 2 years. None of this really, I think, amounts to anything. And if he does, you know, like Dallas, that's like a panic situation. Like if you don't want Trey Lance leading your team in this window right now, you want Dak Prescott leading you in this window right now, A, because you're paying him, B, because you've built everything around him, C, because he's shaped the entirety of what that offense is, being there over the course of his entire career. So, like I said, weird.
Yeah, good old Jerry. So, Charles, we've talked about this before, but the Titans, the way NFL media at large views the Titans, I think sometimes maybe people miss some things on them because people don't like to watch them or pay attention to them. And I'm not going to ask you to comment on specific other media, which we did earlier on the show, but just let me ask you about just the view of the Titans and the view of the Jaguars right now. How do you view it? How do you think the NFL media views it? And is the obsession with the Jags, which I would call, I think people are a little too bullish on them. Do you think it's just because people think Trevor Lawrence is about to become that guy?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it is the growth of Trevor Lawrence. I think it's part of the perception there is, you know, what we're never going to get out of our minds leading into the draft that Trevor Lawrence was going, he was this generational prospect who was, you know, only comes along every 10 or 20 years, whatever. And, you know, that he was going to be the next it guy in the NFL. And through the Urban Meyer period, we're like, oh my God, whoa, what's happened here? Like, this is a crash and burn situation. And then obviously you see, you know, Doug Peterson get in there, he turns it around and they go on their run last year. And so there's a lot of optimism about, okay, the ship's turning in the right direction. We see growth from Trevor Lawrence. And then so what you end up doing is, as media members, we're all idiots when it comes to, like, forecasting the next season. We all forecast, what, growth. Like, oh, this was good. It's going to continue to be good. And the NFL goes, yeah, no, that's not how it works. You know, some stuff continues to be good. Other stuff does not. And, you know, that's how we end up with teams we assume are going to be, you know, the next big jump or the growth team. And then it doesn't ultimately happen. And I think that's part of what plays into, you know, how the Jaguars are getting looked at. Now I want to be fair here too, though. It's not like Calvin Ridley is a good addition for that team. He really is. Now you take the gambling stuff out of the equation. There were a number of teams that were calling the Falcons about acquiring Calvin Ridley, and they were calling with the mindset of making him their number one. So I think Ridley is, as long as, you know, nothing's really changed in terms of his talent level, as a bona fide number one. That's something they didn't have. You know, I think it makes Christian Kirk better. Travis Etienne, them drafting Tank Bigsby, who a lot of teams were telling me when the draft was over, like, hey, Bigsby's got a chance to, you know, eat a lot of you know, the backfield carries from Travis Etienne. That's how good he is. I think that makes them better because now you have a two running back set. And then, you know, there should be growth from having a season where they did turn it in the right direction. They did have there was a lot of progress made, and you know, the veterans should have learned a lot. And then, you know, you look at defensively, there's things to like, I think, about the Jaguars. But again, I told you, I sort of went through that. I discounted the Titans a little bit. I was like, you know, feels like a little bit of a rebuild. I don't know what to expect from Ryan Tannehill. All these different, they like offensive lines, got issues. And then when I went there in camp, I'm like, ooh, this team is better than I thought. Like, it's, when now, when I really think about the defense, I put my eyes on the defense and I think about the depth chart defensively, has a chance to be a really good defensive team. Spears, I'd never seen him live. I told you, we're standing on the side. I'm like, man, that kid's got a gear. When you stand here and you see it in person, it kind of blows you away. And then what we saw offensively, what they were doing offensively, there were some interesting things where you're like, oh, that's right. They changed the OC, and that has a chance to really turn things around inside the Titans a little bit that people aren't really familiar with outside of maybe Tennessee. So I think that's how that ends up happening. Maybe, you know, you just keep staring at Tannehill and going, how long does that guy have? And then you stare at Trevor Lawrence, you go, how long does that guy have before he blows up and it's, you know, becomes everything we thought he was? That colors it. And then I just, again, I don't think a lot of people respect. Mike Vrabel's honestly probably one of the most underrated coaches in the NFL since he became a head coach. Like, it's amazing the job that he's done since he's been there. If he was probably in a market like Chicago or Philly or, you know, New York, people would never shut up about Mike Vrabel, right? But I do think that there's an element of, you know, Tennessee where people takes a while for guys to get their due. So it's a long answer. I do think the Jacksonville Jaguars have a chance to be pretty good. But I told you when I was there, I was like, man, I'd be nervous if I was one of these people in the offseason who was like, they're clearly going to win the division. It's not even going to be close. I'd be nervous after seeing the Titans. Now, the Titans got to stay healthy. Like, you guys explained this to me. Are they going to stay healthy? Are they going to, you know, what's the offensive line going to look like? Those are things that I worry about with Tennessee. But I think people are probably disrespecting Tennessee a little bit, and they're giving a little too much respect to Jacksonville with the assumption that a good finish last year is going to equate to a hot start this year. I don't know for that we know that for sure.
Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, and Fitz coming on. We're excited. Fitz at Yahoo, Fitz on your podcast. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. So we're relaunching the podcast under different formats. Give me more of sort of what we do here. A lot of the news and nuggets and just sort of talking about what exactly is going on behind the scenes. So looking forward to that. And I've been in a point guard role for a while with the podcast. I've been dying to get away from it. I just want to be a shooting guard. Let me give it a shot, though. Let me jack it up.
That's right. Charles, we'll talk to you next week, man. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care, guys.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest. We'll react to what Charles had to say there coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits this Saturday for MTSU football. Blue Raiders kicking off at 6:30 on the road against Alabama. Pregame beginning at 5:30. You can hear all the coverage on 93.3 Classic app and at 93ClassicHits.com. We'll go back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Thanks to Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. I got some tickets to give away. Be caller number 5-615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see the Nashville R&B Experience at Bridgestone Arena coming up on September 8th, featuring Trey Songz, Tamar Braxton, Tevin Campbell, and more. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 for a pair of tickets to the Nashville R&B Experience coming up at Bridgestone Arena on September the 8th. How big of a difference do you think Calvin Ridley makes for Jacksonville this year, Joe Rexrod?
It's a great question. All accounts are he's looked good. I always thought he was very talented. There is a long period of time between injury and then the gambling suspension between, you know, Calvin Ridley playing in an NFL game. So I think you take that into account. But, I mean, look, I think if he can return to basically what he was in Atlanta, then you're going to notice him in that Jacksonville offense, right?
Yeah.
And I think – eventually this year, he's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you got him, Christian Kirk, Evan Engram, Zay Jones, pretty good last year, ETN. I mean, they've got some really good skill players offensively. So, again, like going back to the conversation about, like, the division, I don't think it's like some egregious thing that the Jaguars are the favorite. Like, I think they're going to be a good team. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be good this year. I like their coach and Doug Peterson. So I have no problem with people picking Jacksonville to win the division. I just don't understand the thought process that there's just this huge insurmountable gap that's between the Titans and the Jags. And I feel like over the next week and a half, as more of these things start to come out, I think we're going to see a lot of people that think there's a seismic gap between the Titans and the Jags, and I'm just not there.
Well, and Charles just laid it out. If you cover the league at large, you pay attention, you talk to people, kind of makes you more informed.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how that works? I will say, Robbie, you, I believe, ranted about the training camp tours. Charles coming to Nashville is an example of how it helped him, you know, figure some things out. Like, oh, wow, Tyjae Spears. Didn't even think about that guy. Now it's like, oh, okay.
It's just practice, man. A lot of practice. Yeah. A lot of practice talking. Football preseason.
Yeah, well, you know. I mean,
I get it.
There are limitations.
I get it.
There are limitations. But just personnel, just seeing personnel, especially new personnel. And like he said, and there's another little nugget right there on the offense, which we've been talking about a lot, but the fact that it's going to be different, and I think has looked creative and fun here in practice, much more than it has in the preseason game. So what does that look like in actual games? Very, very, very interested to see that in that first Sunday in New Orleans.
That's pretty wild what Charles had to say on the Nick Bosa front. Like, I would still be shocked if it ends up going all the way to Nick Bosa being traded, but certainly, like, if you're an AFC team out there or you're anybody out there, it's worth paying attention to, because Charles says, you know, if something doesn't get done between the Niners and Bosa in the next 7 to 10 days, maybe things start to ramp up a little bit around the league. That would be that'd be pretty wild if Nick Bosa ever became available.
Yeah, people asking on the text line, like, what would the haul be? My response was it would be massive. But like you were saying during a break, you know, multiple firsts?
I mean, I think for sure multiple firsts. I'm trying to
You're
remember.
You're talking about a dominant pass rusher in his prime. Now, you are talking about a big number.
Right.
But I mean, to me, it's worth paying that guy a big number. I know some of the talk is like he wants to make sure he gets more than Aaron Donald and all that stuff. I mean, Nick Bosa is. What was the haul for Khalil Mack?
That's just what I'm trying to find right now. But, I mean, you're talking about Khalil Mack was the best pass rusher in the league at that time. Is Nick Bosa the best pass rusher? I would probably go T.J. Watt as the best pass rusher, but Bosa's right there in the conversation. So what would that look like in today's NFL? I don't know. It'd be a massive thing, though. Like, I'm sure if he did become available, like if I'm Rand Carthon, I'm at least making a phone call. Like, what are you guys looking for?
Yeah.
See what that looks like. But, again, I'd be shocked if it got to that point. There,
talk about a pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, when you have things, when you got quarterbacks that are really good, you find a way to get a deal done. When you have pass rushers who are really good, most of the time, Joe, you find a way to get a deal done, and I have a feeling that'll happen with San Francisco.
You would sure think so. Yeah, the Raiders got 2019, 2020 firsts,
yep,
and then a third in 20, and a and the Bears did. They did get the Bears got a second back, so a third and a sixth for a second, but they did get the two firsts.
Okay.
For Mac. But I mean, yeah, it's I think multiple firsts would be the and I'm with you.
Starting point.
How
yeah.
can you possibly, if you're the Niners, you can't mess this up, right?
No, I don't think they will.
Yeah.
You gotta get it figured out.
It's fun
out.
To talk about though.
Absolutely.
So is Trey Lance of the Cowboys.
Oh,
that's
my gosh.
Really fun to talk about.
Pro Golf coming to Nashville September 14th through the 17th with the Simmons Bank Open at the Grove Club. Text in the keyword golf to 615-737-1025 and enter for a weekend pass for four to enjoy the event in style, including food and drink. Once again, text in the keyword golf. Also, make sure you check out Vanderbilt football this weekend on 1025-1063 The Game. Vanderbilt taking on Alabama A&M at 6 o'clock at home. Pre-game coverage beginning at 4:30. You can hear it all on the 1025 The Game app or at thegamenashville.com. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Fat Jack from fatjacksports.com. College football beginning tonight. Utah taking on Florida. We'll get Fat Jack's thoughts on that game tonight and the opening weekend of college football coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. And we're going to be joined every Thursday morning at 8:45 by Fat Jack from FatJackSports.com. Looking ahead to the weekend's action, college football beginning this weekend, NFL Week 1 just a week away. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Fat Jack. So, Fat Jack, welcome to the show. Tell us about what you do at FatJackSports.com.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's football season is here. We're finally ready to get going. And for a lot of people, they're starting to bet on the games now. Sports gambling has exploded nationally. I've been a professional sports gambler for 27 years. I run around the country. I have a sports handicapping service where I help guys make money. I'm a lot different than a lot of other people out there that might have 10 or 15 different packages per week. I only give away the top games that I'm personally going to play by email and by text. And then most importantly, I'm 100% transparent. So you're able to go to FatJackSports.com and see that you're getting only the best plays. They're posted and documented under the results tab. I talk about responsible gambling. I talk about the exact games that I bet, money management, things that are not sexy. There's nothing sexy about some of the stuff that helps you make money betting on sports. But the reality is that if you're going to make money, you've got to be able to treat it more like an investment, less like going to the fair, going to the circus, and throwing the ring toss. You've got to be able to put a little discipline into it. And I allow people to do that while also having fun. And so with college football here, there's no better time than now to go to FatJackSports.com and just apply some common sense, dial into the information there, and hopefully give yourself a better chance to make money this year. I go on in well over 150 markets on TV each week, including Nashville. I'm on a show called Beat the Odds. It's on the NBC affiliate that runs on the weekends starting this weekend around the country. And then also radio. I'm on radio. I'm on Sirius, ESPN, all over the country. And so a good time to go get signed up if you're going to be betting the games or even thinking about it. And hopefully during this segment each week, we'll be able to give the listeners some answers to help them get on the right path if they're going to be betting the games.
Absolutely. You can check that out at FatJackSports.com. So what stands out to you? College football beginning this weekend, week one with a full slate. You got Utah and Florida tonight, and then a full slate of action coming up over the weekend, over the holiday weekend. What stands out to you as you look at the week one of college football?
Yeah, first of all, if somebody tells you they know a ton about what's going to be going on this weekend in college football, that's your first red flag that they're a liar, okay? Because with the transfer portal and freshmen, everything going on in college football, nobody really knows a ton, including the line setter. So there are opportunities to take advantage of some of these things. But what you really want to do the first couple of weeks, first week NFL, first week of college football, is play against what the general public's going to bet, find some value where there's going to be a difference between what the public perceives is going to happen, maybe but because of the names on the front of the jerseys, versus the what's actually going to happen based on the information that nobody knows. So look for home favorites of 30 points or more. They've done really, really well of the first week. So you get a home favorite of 30 points or more playing an FBS opponent. They're covering 72% of the time since 2014. So you want to look at some of these general things that can then narrow down to find the spot. So teams like Central Florida, Michigan, Oklahoma, Alabama, Auburn, A&M, Texas, they're actually comfortable teams to play, but you're going to have to give big, big numbers in week one. So within that, we can look at games. And frankly, USC was that type of team last week, and they didn't get there. But a team like USC in this spot as well, given 38 points against Nevada, you're going to look at games like that where they're either going to be able to score at will, name their number, or they have a motivation to run the score up. Look at Oklahoma, Arkansas State. That's one of those games. Arkansas State 7-1 against the spread. They're last hit on the road, so they typically do play well when they go on the road. But this Oklahoma team out of Brent Venables, a lot expected of them this year. Their offense should be able to name their score. And defensively is their big question mark. But Arkansas State keeps games low scoring typically when they go on the road. 7 of their last 9 under the total. And so don't expect them to score a bunch of points. This is one of those games where, although you have to lay a ton of points up to 35, 36 points down, probably the right side of the game. So I look at Oklahoma in that spot. Another one, you know, a team like Louisville, the Louisville Cardinals, very interesting. You know, they got absolutely no love in conference from the media when they were putting together the preseason poll. They had zero top 25 votes and very little love. But Vegas has them, they're over under win total at 8.5. So something's got to give here. Either Vegas is wrong on how good they think Louisville is going to be, or the media is correct, and they're going to have a really bad year. I tend to think this is the type of team that they are, under the new coach, a little more time, they're going to be better. I think they are going to score some points, and so I would look for Louisville to beat Georgia Tech this week as well. These two teams are totally different than they've been in the past. Georgia Tech not scoring a ton of points, playing better defense. Louisville used to score a bunch of points. Now they're playing better defense. I think Louisville actually covers the number here. I'd like the 7.5 on the road against Georgia Tech.
Speaking of big home favorites and the unknown of week one of college football, Jack, the game that fascinates me is Colorado at TCU. TCU around 2021. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, Dion's not going to play at all. And I think this is a dumpster fire. You know, I'm going to be in Colorado, and everybody up there is, and that's not where the game is, but everybody in Colorado, I spent a lot of time there since, you know, nationally you can gamble there a lot. They love what's going on there, but I think this thing's a dumpster fire. If it's going to turn the corner and Dion's going to get this program going, I don't think it happens this week. Mike Dyke's really good coach. We saw what they did last year through the transfer portal. I think they absolutely named their number here. Back door is always going to be open, but it's going to be more of a wait and see. And that's the other thing about week one. You don't want to bet every single game, because if you're betting a bunch of games, especially this week, you're just guessing, you're flipping a coin. You don't want to do that. But Colorado giving up a bunch of points when they go on the road. Five of their last five games have gone over the total. And actually five of their last six overall. So defensively, they had a ton of holes to fill. I'm not sure Dion's been able to do that. So I think TCU, with the new quarterback, will have some success offensively. They're 8-1 straight up their last nine, and 13-2 their last 15 straight up. Dykes has got them going in Fort Worth. I think this team actually will name their number. I would go over the total in this one and also lean toward TCU. But again, guys, week one, most games are a wait and see. You want to just – it's like jumping in Lake Michigan in the middle of February. You want to – if you have to do it, you want to dip your toe. Just get some momentum. It's like if you're going to – in the PGA Tour, you can lose it on Thursday. You really can't win the tournament on Thursday. Make some pars. Let's just build a little bit of profit this week. Get some momentum going so next week we can take advantage of these college games and do something similar in the NFL.
Well, Jack, we're looking forward to you joining us every Thursday morning at 8:45. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. Go to FatJackSports.com. What you see is what you get. The prices are all posted. I'm 100% documented. I've been doing it for 27 years, making not only myself but the clients around the country money. A new way to bet on sports for a lot of people out there listening in the national area, and it's an opportunity to actually make money. Remember, guys, it's not the gambling that she hates. It's the losing. Stop losing. You'll find that the loved ones of your life don't hate gambling near as much. So have a great weekend. Good luck to college football. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Fat Jack from FatJackSports.com. You can check that out on the website there, and he'll be with us every Thursday morning at 8:45 here on the show. Speaking of college football, Joe, finally back this weekend. Virginia and Tennessee coming up. You can check that out on 102.5, 106.3 The Game at 11 o'clock. Presented by Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all the hottest non-conference games across the country. That's going to do it for us on the program today here, Joe. Got some college football talk tomorrow. Big Orange Mac on the program at 6:15 in the morning, so that'll be fun. Looking forward to that.
Jared will give us a lesson in arrogance.
It's at 7 o'clock.
That'll five be in a row, baby.
That's right. No question about it. Winning streak for Joe Rexroad and Jared versus Joe. That does it for us. The Chase McCabe Show coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.